I'm Jessie.
Hi, this is Helen.
And we're Asian Bitches Down Under. And one of us will be in Taiwan in 12 hours.
Yeah.
No, a little bit more than 12 hours.
Oh, yeah. I'll be flying exactly 12 hours from now.
Oh.
Yeah.
You do not know how my envy levels have just skyrocketed. And my head is like exploding with envy right
now. How is that possible? You're traveling in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, but let's not talk about that for now. We're going to talk about your trip. So Helen and I, before we started recording, chatted about logistics, the flight, et cetera, the grueling waiting time. At least you have someone with you. My question, the most important one for me, usually I ask people when after they fly what movie you watched, but I'm not going to ask you now because you haven't flown. Yeah. But the all-important question is you're going for 2 weeks. So bearing in mind you might acquire some books while you're there, obviously.
I know.
What is the book in your carry-on that you have that you're going to take with you?
So I have two literary works with me that I'm planning to take with me. One of them, I don't know if you want me to talk about it.
Tell me.
On the podcast because it's one of your work. Your work.
Mine?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
You don't want
That's
me.
That's so nice. That's so nice.
Yeah,
That's
so it's
so
a manuscript
nice.
For your work. So,
okay.
Because
I'm like, mine? What did I write?
Because it's about, like, because I'm traveling, I like to read something about traveling when I'm traveling. So your next book have some elements of.
There's a lot of travel.
Yeah, so what I like to do. And the other one, I think you gave it to me last week. Hold on, let me just have a look. I still have this. They have them in the Telstra bag. I think
the tote bag I no longer wear. Yeah,
the tomorrow, and tomorrow.
Yeah, by Gabrielle Zevin.
Yeah. The one that you read a couple
Probably
of months
the
ago.
Best book I've read in the last 5 years.
Yeah, so I think it's chunky enough for me to, you know, digest through 2 weeks while I am, you know, being transported from city to city.
You will race through that.
Oh,
that is an exquisite book. Oh,
okay.
That is the first book where I've, like, genuinely just, I finished it and I had two overwhelming feelings. Oh, number one, I wish I wrote it.
Oh.
And number two, it made me want to create something.
Oh, that's
and it doesn't
funny.
Matter, like, if you're a writer or a musician or a filmmaker, like, and, you know, the central protagonists are video game creators. Mm-hmm. And despite that, it made me just want to, the way in which the book narrativizes their love of what they do makes you want to create something and put something beautiful out into the world.
Oh, that's nice.
It's such a sort of love letter to just the whole idea of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And she does it so miraculously because I think it's a miracle because it's about video games. And I have no relationship to video games. You know, like I don't play it.
Except for when we were growing up. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah,
not yeah, hard for me, I just, I'm just.
No, it's very easy. It's very easy. Oh, okay. I can't. Oh, I can't deal with how great this book is. But actually, I wanted to talk about another book that I've on the same length, which I'll touch on later. But I just want to finish. Any last thoughts about how you're feeling about your Taiwan trip? I also wanted to add the manuscript I gave you of my book. The last part is set in Taiwan, Taipei.
Oh,
so I think it'll be so brilliant for you to be there and then to tell me whether or not how I write about the city is like makes you feel like it's an accurate portrayal of Taipei.
Nice.
Because I really struggled with that, Hel. I really struggled with it because I haven't been to Taipei since 2019.
Mm.
And, you know, you and I, we didn't grow up in Taipei. It's still a big city for us. So I haven't spent many, like the longest I've spent there is a couple of weeks. And so, like, I really wanted to try and when I was writing it, I remember just looking through Google Images and also like Google Maps trying to, and also the videos on YouTube, you know, those YouTube videos that are 3 hours long that take you on a GoPro.
On the streets.
Someone, exactly. Just walking through the streets and the sounds of the motorcycle, you know, those scooters. Yeah. That is the most comforting sound in the world.
Yeah. Everything you need except for the smell.
Exactly.
Smell of Taiwan.
You just need the smell of Taiwan. Yeah.
And then you're there.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the books that I'll be bringing with me. And my daughter is saying that she came up with a word that she is very nerve-sided,
Nerve sided.
nervous and excited. Yeah, about the trip because it will be her first time to Taiwan. Yeah.
Oh, she, oh my God. I can't even imagine how her world is about to be like split open in a good way. In a good way.
In a good way. Yeah. So
Nobody has ever gone to Taiwan and not liked it.
I think
Am I right? Am I right?
I think so. I mean, I think people do have some negative feedbacks about it, but most of all, I think people came back with positive reviews about Taiwan and our preparation. So I still haven't packed yet, so I'm gonna do that
You
after.
haven't?
No, I just started this morning, and
Oh, wow.
I come to realize the older I get, the less I
Yeah.
want to pack.
Of course. Of
I just don't
course.
want to bring, like when I was younger,
You
I'm like,
know,
oh, I have to bring this, I have to bring that, I have to look good on the trip. And I'm like, oh, forget it. No, I just want to be comfortable now.
Exactly. Me too. Me too. I'm gonna wear the ugliest when I go overseas. I'm gonna wear the ugliest sneakers, but they're like really comfortable because you're gonna be walking 8 hours a day.
That's right. Yeah. So that's what I'm going to do as well. I'm not going to, because the places that we stay will have washing machines. So,
Okay, yeah,
and
awesome. That's
dryer.
fantastic.
Yeah,
That's
so
fantastic.
I'll
And you know, also as an adult, that if you forgot something like deodorant, you could just go and buy it. It's not the end of the
Yes.
world.
Yes. And in Taiwan, it's so convenient.
Oh, Taiwan, yeah.
Convenience store in every corner.
Open 24/7, guys. There's a thing called cities that never sleep, outside of New York. I wanted to ask you, also, like, you know, I just wanted to also let our listeners that know that Helen is going to said, you know, be posting about stuff, what she's eating, awesome things like that. Sure. So I will basically feel like I'm there, which I'm very excited about. But and obviously during your trip, you're going to be eating so many
Lots of food.
incredibly mind-blowing food. Can you just tell me right now what's one thing you're really looking forward to eating?
Oh, okay. Funny enough, I am looking forward to just, have the very basic sort of Chinese iconic. Oh, Erdanghun, I haven't really thought about it, but maybe beef noodles. Erdanghun, for those who doesn't know, is what are they called?
Oyster,
Oyster.
vermicelli noodles and oysters.
Oysters. I'm not quite sure about having seafood during my overseas trips, but
Oh
I'll
my
see.
God, Helen,
I
I had the best sashimi in Taipei. I had
know,
like plates and plates of cheap sashimi when I was in Taipei.
yeah, I know.
Oh.
That's another thing that when you get older, you're more self-aware about not to get food
Oh my
poisoned.
God, can I say every time I eat oysters now, I just like mentally prepare myself to get food poisoning. Honestly, I just think, okay, this is a risk. I'm gonna take it.
It's that traumatic scene from Mr. Beans when he was having oysters on his trip.
Oh, right, yeah.
And then you always think that, oh, okay, what if I get food poison on holiday? It's the worst, I think.
Yeah, oh yeah, it is. It really is the worst. But you can't, you know, you can't stop your life for
That's
those
right.
reasons, you know?
So I'll be traveling next 2 weeks for our listeners. We won't be recording next couple of weeks because after next 2 weeks will be Jesse's turn. Trip and I do have a couple of recordings of interviews prepared, so there will be a couple of chats. There will be still podcast episodes
Yeah,
released,
we're
but
yeah. Helen will still
yeah,
be
just
releasing them.
follow us on Instagram and see what we're doing overseas and
Yeah, we're super excited. And so, what is your daughter carrying? What book is she carrying? How many?
She's going to take 2 books with her as well, but I don't think she has decided which books to take. She is going to take one novelty book and one proper fiction, or
Yeah, you
we
got to
call it
do that.
proper book,
Yeah, you got to do that.
the
I have to say,
novelty books for her is like graphic novels or
yeah,
picture books.
can I just say there's also such a fine art to selecting the book you're going to take for your travels. Like, you know how there are consultants who come in to your house before you have a baby to check out whether your house is foolproof. You know, rich people hire those people. Okay. Yeah. So I feel like you should hire someone to help you sort out what to take, what book to take on your travels, even though it'll be like one or two. But honestly, it's a huge thing because like you're going to, it's almost like deciding who to take with you on your holiday, you know, because you're going to be with them for long stretches. It's your companion. Exactly. Yeah. So I agree. It's a great decision of on your daughter to take something lighthearted and then take something more, I guess, like literary. Because yeah, sometimes you just want to flip through a rom-com, you know?
Yes.
We don't all want to read Norman Mailer. Who reads Norman Mailer these days anyway?
Hi there. If you're new to our show, thanks for tuning in into our program, and we hope you will stay with us for a very long time. And if you are a regular listener, we're forever grateful for your continuous support throughout this period of uncertainty. It has really helped this podcast to gain a great exposure, as our mission is to center the perspectives of people who look like us, who are marginalized historically to the sideline of conversation. So if you haven't already, we encourage you to subscribe to our podcast on Omni, Apple, Google or Spotify and leave a rating and review. And of course, as a small podcast program, we rely on listeners' support to continue this work. Please do check out our Buy Me Coffee page and make a donation in order for us to continue to advocate the intersectionality in the podcast industry.
Okay, so where should we start this week?
Well, I guess since we're on the topic of books, I want to talk about we're doing an episode of catch ups. I want to start with the book that I've been staying up very late into the night to read.
Nice.
It's very rare for me to get so excited about a book where I actually choose the book over Netflix. So usually I'd rather watch a movie or. Yeah, usually it's a movie. This week it's been Beef, which we're going to talk about later on Netflix. But this book, it is a very famous book that everyone's been talking about in the last 12 months. It's called Pineapple Street by Jenny Jackson.
Nice. Okay.
It's kind of like the new sort of Fleischman is in trouble-esque kind of book. Uh-huh. Everyone's talking about it. Because I don't know why. I don't know the craze of surrounding it. I think it's because the author, Jenny Jackson, is the executive head or she is the, vice president and executive editor at Knopf, which is one of the biggest publishing houses in America. Mm-hmm. So she's been an editor for like more than 10 years. And then now she's turned around and decided to write a book of hers herself. I think she's in her early 40s.
I feel like that happens a lot with sales journalists or editors and turn writer.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it makes sense. You kind of like edit a lot of books and then you decide you want to write one yourself. Yeah. This is so good. This is like, it's so good in a way that like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of like a food that's kind of addictive, but it's not too bad for you. Like I wouldn't say this is the writing quality is as good as Gabrielle Zevin. Like I feel like Gabrielle Zevin is a bit more literary. This is a bit more
casual.
It's a bit less literary, but it's still very, very good. It's still very well written. It's just a bit more gossipy. And it's basically a story about rich people, three rich women. So one of them has married into a rich family. And then it's from three different perspectives. It's third person, but it's from three different women. Sasha, who's has married into a wealthy family. And so her husband has two sisters, Dali and Georgiana. And so we follow Dali, who's married to a Korean American. There's not everyone's white in this book. And then there's Georgiana, who's like in her early 20s. And she's in love with this guy who ends up you know, I won't spoil it for anyone who hasn't read it, but it's like an incredible storyline. All three of them have really enticing stories. Somehow, even though there's no like strong plot, like nothing horrible happens to any of them. There's no trauma, you know, at the moment anyway, I'm halfway through. I can't believe how well she still manages to make me so invested in these three characters. Like the one who is recently married, the rich guy, Sasha, her parents-in-law, so the wealthy family that she's married into, they like gifted her a house. They gifted her and her husband a house after they got married. And it's like a four-story apartment in New York. Wow. And like, so like these people are uber wealthy. Mm-hmm. And yet I still care about her. And yet I still care about these super wealthy white women who go to tennis every week and like have caterers do their dinners. Like it's like ludicrous, their kind of level of wealth. Mm-hmm. And yet I still want to know, you know, what happens to them. And it's just, I'm like crazy about this book. In a kind of different way to the craziness I felt about Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. Like when I was reading Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, I kept thinking, I wish I wrote this book. It's just so beautiful and perfect. I don't feel the same way about Pineapple Street. I don't want to be the author of a story about rich folks, you know. Mm-hmm. That's not my thing, you know, in life. But I really appreciate it. I don't in any way feel kind of conflicted about talking about it because, you know, on this show, I know we like to, especially you, Helen, you like to, you know, make sure that we give platform to, you know, underrepresented writers and, you know, writers of color and all that. But it's just like, it's so good. Like, I can't deny how good this book is.
Has it won any awards or has it had a label of like New York Times bestseller?
I think it is a New York Times bestseller. It hasn't won any awards yet. I think it only came out, let me check when it came out. It came out in March this year. It came out last month. That's crazy. I feel like it's been out for a year or something.
So it's those sort of book that is, it's like the popularest sort of book and people like to read it because you get to peek into
the 1%
someone's life.
Like also because also because I feel like people in the publishing world are usually quite wealthy or at least they're middle class. If they're not the 1%, they know people who are in the 1%. Or they aspire you know, for the 1%. And it's so well written, it's very sparse. I can't wait for you to read it. It's very easy to read, I have to say. It's very, very easy to read. So that's why I like last night I finished like half of the book in one sitting. Yeah. Incredible. I can't recommend it enough. And I just can't wait until they make it into a Netflix series or a movie.
Another one.
I'm just imagining who's playing who. Yeah.
How funny is that? Now that with the streaming platform, now we are looking into different ways of creativity. You know, with books in the past, you have a lot of novels that won't be adapted into movies or films like decades later. But now we're seeing books written 2 years ago and now it's out in Netflix.
I know, it's crazy.
You know, on Netflix or, you know, Disney Plus or things that's happening in our society being adapted into documentary like 6 months later, you know, after the case was open or after the case was
closed.
Fast. It almost feel like it's like a fast food media.
It is,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's move on to some TVs that we watched this week. I actually want to start with Wheelmania. Yeah, because I don't really have much to say about
Wheelmania. Have you finished it?
I finished it. We finished it. Yeah.
Okay. I haven't finished it. I'm about five episodes in, I think. Four or five.
Okay, what are your thoughts about it so far?
I actually stopped watching the show in its first episode after about half an hour because I thought the writing was like slow and bad and I wasn't really invested in it. I gave up on it, but then I listened to a friend's podcast, Pilot Club, where they talked about it and they kind of had positive thoughts about it. And so I decided I'd give it a second chance. And so I did. I went back and it is kind of pulling me through, at least for now. It's not as compelled to finish it as, say, Beef, which is the next show we'll be talking about. Yes. Nevertheless, it's something good to put on while I'm cooking on the background, in the background. I do, for you guys who don't know Wellmania, I actually first heard about this show because I was driving towards the city. And if you're driving towards the city from the west through from like Parramatta Road into kind of into the city, through to towards Pitt Street, you see a huge sign. There's a huge billboard, like a huge, huge billboard, with Celeste Barber looking at the camera, like dazed. Yeah, and she is the star of Wellmania, which is a show, and that's loosely based on a memoir from 2017 written by Bridget Delaney, who is a, I guess, a columnist for The Guardian here in Australia. Yeah. And it's just about a woman who is a, well, in the show, I'm not sure because I haven't read the book, Bridget Delaney's book, I'm not sure about her, but in the show, Celeste Barber, who's of course an Instagram star, she plays a food critic who has moved to New York. She's got a green card. She comes back for her best friend's 40th, her best friend who's an Asian, and doesn't pass, has a sort of like health scare and can't pass the medical check to return to the US. So yes. That's the story about
her. She lost her green card in Australia. That's why she needs to reapply it. And then when she went to reapply it at the US counselor, they say that you have to go through a medical check, which she didn't pass.
Yeah, because she's too unhappy.
Basically stuck in Sydney.
Stuck in Sydney, yeah. And I kind of like my friend Billy, who said that he related to the character. I've never had a green card, but I do. I like the kind of little digs that Celeste Barber's character makes at Sydney. Like she kind of digs, she kind of like criticizes Sydney and says, oh, this is a city with no culture compared to New York. You know, that sounded a lot of like I was like maybe 3-4 years ago when I tried to
get
out of Sydney so desperately and try and make my way in, make my life in New York. But what I kind of wanted to focus on is really like the Asian representation in this in the series, and there is quite a lot. I wanted to say first of all, the screenplay script was adapted by Benjamin Law, who's Asian, and there are a couple of key characters who are Asian in this cast. So everyone is white. It's an Australian show. That's like not surprising. I mean, it shouldn't be that way, obviously, but you know, this is a huge, huge Netflix-backed series, but I do appreciate the kind of Asian representation that I've seen. So like I said, 40-year-old, her best friend who's turned 40, she comes back for, she's an Asian. She is played by an actress called JJ Fong. Haven't heard of her. Have you ever heard of her or seen
I've
her?
I've actually seen her in, sorry, I just have to look it up now because
yeah, sure, sure.
Her in one of the movie years ago. Sounds a bit offensive if I say this, she's not a like a typical looking Asian, but then again that you can kind of, you know, pick her out of anywhere, but I immediately recognize her because she was in this film. I'm just looking up IMDb now. It's an Australian film about the end of the world, but I cannot remember the name.
Australian
of
film about the end of the world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she,
Tomorrow When the World, Where the War Began?
Yes, that's right. That's the one. Yeah, she.
Isn't that like a teen flick?
It's a teen flick. And the other Asian character in that film was the young boy who played Benjamin Law in Family Law.
Right.
Sorry, I'm just going to look it up now.
Okay, while you do that, I'm going to talk about the other Asians in the cast. Celeste Barber's love interest is half Asian. She meets him at the gym. His name is Alexander Hodge, whose dad is Irish and mum is Chinese, Singaporean, according to Wiki. Celeste Barber's brother, who's gay, who's a PT, he is soon to be married to also a half Asian actor, Remy Hai, who, of course, we know from, I think he's been around for a long time, but most famously known for his role in Crazy Rich Asians.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so I think there's quite a few key characters who are Asian, which I kind of like was, I like that her romantic interest is an Asian guy. I don't know what ends up happening. You can spoil it and tell me because I'm not sure if I'll keep watching it. But yeah, what are your thoughts about the Asian representation?
I probably mistaken her with another Asian actor. But yeah, JJ Fong, I'm pretty sure I've seen her somewhere. Or was she in...
Maybe you've seen her on the theatre. Well, while Helen has a look, I'll just kind of move on.
Oh, I found her.
Okay, yeah.
So she's a New Zealand actor. She's a New Zealand actress, sorry. And she's in one of my favorite, all-time favorite TV drama.
I know what you're going to say, the creamery one.
Yes, the creamery one. Oh, yeah. My God, I cannot believe I forgot about that.
Yeah.
That is the best adaptation of like a reverse Handmaid's Tale.
Really? Yeah.
All right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so Creamery. I wonder if it's due on ABC or SBS, but Creamery, yeah, if anyone could find it. I think it's the best black comedy drama.
What do you reckon about her relationship to her white husband and the kids in the show?
It's very typical. Yeah.
What do you mean?
Okay, so my thoughts about Liv Healy, which is Celeste Barber's character,
mm-hmm.
as best friend, Amy, played by JJ Form, is a bit strange. Like when you, once you go through the whole series and you kind of find out how they met when they were younger, but I always think that it's so hard for, this is going to be my own stereotypical bias with friendships. I think it's very hard for Asians to be
friends with white people.
Yeah, for that.
Yeah.
Such a long time.
Yeah, yeah. I agree, by the way.
And also, there's not much culture nuance, even though that they put an Asian face in it, except for they had, you know, Amy's parents spoke a couple of lines of
Cantonese. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Cantonese. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
There's zero culture nuance.
Yeah.
You know, you don't see them eating Asian food. You don't see them doing Asian stuff.
Yeah. Well, they're basically white. The Asians in this movie are basically white.
The Asians are basically white. They live
in suburbs,
jogging along Bondi Beach.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hello, Benjamin Law, basically white. He's like the whitest guy ever.
Yeah, so I don't see much of the culture nuance in, yeah, even though there's the Asian representation. Yeah.
I guess from one amazing kind of, well, I wouldn't call it amazing, but from one series to another with Asians, let's talk about Beef.
Yay. Isn't it something that I was a bit disappointed if you compare Wilmania and Beef, because Wilmania, I don't want to say there's no depth about Wilmania, because basically it's almost like a combination of Fleabag, Trainwreck, and what else? Shrew?
Yeah.
I remember our friend Billy say that Celeste Barber is basically an Australian
Amy Schumer. Yeah, I love that. And he's so right.
Yeah, so I don't think there's, don't feel very innovative from there, but it's a funny drama series to watch. So coming back to Beef, I have so much to say about it, but I don't know where to start. It's such an incredible show. We started watching about two nights ago, and we're on to episode 4.
I think I'm at the same rate as you. I'm at episode 4 or 5. Yeah,
and the script is just amazing.
Oh, it's incredible.
It's
so good.
Yeah. I don't know whether or not it's based on anything.
No, I know. I don't know either.
Because the pace and the way that it was represented from each episode, at the beginning of each episode, there's like a, almost like a painting, and they have the title of the episode.
Yeah.
It almost like it screams at your face of what's going to happen.
It's very White Lotus, by the way, that background images.
Oh,
those images remind me of White Lotus.
And I just saw the cast, Ali Wong, Steven Yeun, they were just perfect. I actually like Steven Yeun in this more than Ali Wong, because I feel like Ali Wong is playing herself.
Right, yeah. Do you mean the character or the actor?
The character.
Right, yeah. I have so many thoughts. I don't even know where to start. First of all, like you said, great cast. Steven Yeun is so mind-blowingly good looking. He's so handsome. It's like what is so great about the show? There are so many things, but you know, because I'm a looksist, I'm gonna start with like, you know, the good looking people in the show. Two male leads, Steven Yeun and then Ali Wong's husband, who's played by Joseph Lee. I'm like, he's so handsome, it's like painful, right?
It's so strange. I've never seen him anywhere
before. I know, I have never seen him anywhere.
He's so tall.
Either.
He's massive. Like,
he's huge. He's like the Ryan Reynolds, but Asian.
Yes.
Sorry, I shouldn't say but Asian. He's Ryan Reynolds and he's Asian, meaning he's better than Ryan Reynolds.
Yes.
Yeah. Who likes Ryan Reynolds? He's like a geek. But the thing is, the reason why I've compared him to Ryan Reynolds is because Joseph Lee's character, who plays Ali Wong's husband, George, he's kind of like a doofus. Like, he's kind of tall, kind of very broad-shouldered, handsome, but a bit dumb. He's kind of stupid. He's kind of stupid.
He makes fast and he's like
He's kind of vacant. So basically, the story is about the series follows these two characters who, in the first 5 minutes of the show, on the pilot, they have an encounter where one of them almost runs into the other one. It's a road rage incident, basically. Mm-hmm. And then Steven Yeun's character starts chasing Ali Wong's, and then it's like the first 5 minutes is absolutely amazing.
I know.
It gets right into the crux of it. But the thing is, they don't see each other's faces. So they only know, like, Steven Yeun has only tracked Ali Wong's license plate number.
Yeah.
We sort of like see the first 10 minutes of the incident. And then for the next kind of half an hour of the show, we follow them individually.
Mm.
So like Steven Yeun is a contractor / handyman who's living in a hotel that his parents had lost because the cousin was involved with some sort of fraud incident, and he's been jailed. So and now he's living in his brother, who is like very like lazy, only wants to, you know,
make money out of crypto.
Crypto guy, plays video games all day, is not motivated. And kind of struggling, basically. Sort of very typical migrant family story. So their parents are now back in Korea. And then we flip to Ali Wong, who is living in some like super wealthy part of LA. This is set in LA. And her husband is the heir of like a famous Japanese like
artist?
Designer or something. Oh, yeah. It's chair designer. Something like super, super bougie and white, you know?
Yes.
But he's Japanese. And she is trying to like negotiate her own kind of business selling special plants. I actually don't even get it.
So she's an entrepreneur of a brand called Koyo House.
With
HAUS, you know, it's a pretty kind of like a European name. Which sells indoor plants. And she's making this business deal of having her business sell to like a bigger
chain or something, like a store. And the boss of that is, I think, Elizabeth Banks, is it?
Oh, is it?
So let me have a look. I'm pretty sure it's it's Maria Bello. My bad. Yeah.
The wealth, you start comparing the wealth of Ali Wong's character and
to
the business partner she wants to sell her business to. It's mind-blowing seeing how rich people can get to. They eat mushroom foam for this ridiculous
special dinner. I love the way in which the show is written by a guy called Lee Sung-jin, Korean born. He hasn't had a lot of credits to his name. He's only had an IMDb. He's done something called Undone in 2019 and then Dave in 2020. He's not extremely prolific, but already, you know, we know he's like an incredible writer.
Dave will be his like the breakthrough.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, absolutely. I agree with you what you said before about liking Steven Yeun's character more than Ali Wong's. I feel like both of them, I mean, usually, naturally, because you and I, we're women, we sympathize with the woman, female character more. In this case, she's an Asian woman, so I would have thought that I, teamed with her more. But The thing is, I actually was rooting for Steven Yeun's character way more.
Because there's class differences.
Yeah, there's a huge class difference.
Clear class differences of a working class and, you know, upper middle class, where she is just concerning about her business, concerning about her money.
Yeah.
About how
her daughter and the anxiety with the painting.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to dismiss all her worries and, you know, the relationship breakdowns with her husband. It's all out there for her. I want to feel sorry for her, but at the same time,
you don't?
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, same. Me too.
The character she's playing is just so hard to like.
Also, because she's married to such a handsome guy, it's like, how can you be sad when you're married to, like, Asian Ryan Reynolds?
Stay home dad.
I know, yeah.
Literally doing
and he's very thing. And he's very sweet. He's very sweet. There's nothing like I said before, he's sort of dumb and hollow. But he's sweet. He's like a sweet, chummy, kind hearted, big bro kind of.
The only time that I feel sorry for her as a woman again is that you can tell that she's in a woman's body and she can't have it all, because there are times that she wants to just let go. For anyone who hasn't watched up to, you know, episode 3 or 4, you come to realize that she's actually want to sell her business so she can spend more time
with her daughter, her
family. Yeah. But the business deal is kind of up in the air, and her company needs her. She can't move. You know, she's very heavily pressured by her work, but at the same time, she wants to be there for her daughter. You can really tell that woman can just basically cannot have it all, even so that she has a stay-home dad, you know, the husband who looks after the one child. Yeah. She always feels guilty that she's not there for her daughter. Whereas what we see in our mainstream society is that men goes out, we see fucking millions of those kind of men who is in the same position as Ellie Wong's character, who probably care very little about their family. They just need to go out and work and, you know, sign up business deals and, I don't know, just makes a lot of money. That's the only time that I feel sorry for her, because she wants to do incredibly well in her work, but she also wants to be there for her daughter. I think that's where her frustration comes out. That's where it leads to the road rage. And it's very different to Steven Yeun, but at the same time, it's very similar as well, because Steven Yeun's character, Denny, he's the oldest child, you know, of the family. And I don't know if you have seen the episode where he talked about the oldest child mentality, that you always want to
survive
and do the best and do what your parents tells you to do. I feel sorry for him as well, because my own mentality has shifted from that as I grow older. I know that I can't always be there for my parents. I'm a person myself as an individual that I need to do things for myself. And Denny in Beef is trying to find himself as well. And he wants to be a good model for his younger brother.
I think the moment where I thought I'm completely on Danny's side is when he goes back to church.
Oh, my God, I know.
His first girlfriend, or someone who, you know, he had a close relationship to. It's a Korean woman. I just also like the fact that this show centers around Asian people, right, in a Western country. And, their Asianness is not the thing. Like, the default is just that they're normal human beings, and the Asian part of them is never foregrounded. You know, they don't mention anything about kind of the fact that they're, you know, there are little things like when Steven Yeun, he goes to Ellie Wong's house for the first time, he tracks her down through the internet. I didn't even know you could do that. Like, look for people you can get their address. That's like terrifying. Maybe in America you can do that. He goes over to her house, and then he ends up like peeing all over her bathroom because he realizes, you know, she's the one who fucking fucked him over in the beginning of the show. And when her husband comes back, he was like kind of like, let's just leave it. But she made a point to him, oh, he said he had a problem with you being Japanese.
Weaponized.
So there are like little things like that in it. But for most of it, like, you know, they're Asian people surrounded by other Asians, and they interact in a way that, you know, you and I would normally interact. And I like seeing this old flame that Steven Yeun's character comes into contact with again. And she's now heavily pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad to see her husband also is Korean. He's a pastor at a church.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of has gay vibes to be honest. But, you know, he's so like, he's kind of like K-pop-y handsome.
Yeah.
And Steven Yeun, there's an episode, maybe in episode 2 or 3, he goes back to that church, and then it's like kind of like a Hillsong kind of church where everyone, when he goes in, people are singing with their hand raised in the air. Okay. And like during the song,
church or something.
Pardon?
It's called Glory. They have their own.
Oh, Glory. Name. Yeah, yeah, Glory's, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And during the song, he breaks down. He absolutely breaks down, and it was
that was the best.
It was such a. I just thought this guy is incredible. I always really liked his work. Minari was, I think, one of the first roles I've seen him in, and obviously Nope, where he plays Dupe, and then he was also in another film, a drama with Amy Schumer, which I didn't end up seeing.
Oh, okay.
But it's like a drama. It's called Human. It has the name Humans in the title, so I forget what it is. But mm-hmm. Steven Yeun, he has a meltdown. And it was so sympathetic because I recently had one of those moments where I was just like just sobbing uncontrollably, and you don't really know why. Like I feel like I thought of maybe I knew why he was crying. I think he was just like so like overwhelmed by recent trauma and kind of all the things that, everything's happening all at once for him, and he's just like kind of finally finds a space where he gets to unload his grief. What do you reckon?
I think the same as well. I think, I don't know how other people interpret the whole show, but so far, up to episode 4, but my own interpretation is that these two main characters, they both are so unhappy about their life. And two met each other, they were about to take their own life. You see the nuance with Ali Wong's character, Amy, playing with the gun. Even though that she says that she was...
Well, she says she's masturbating with
the gun. She was masturbating, yeah. But that scene looks to me as if she was about to take her life.
Oh, really? I didn't read it as that.
That's my own interpretation.
Oh, okay.
And as Danny, Steven Yeun's character, he was, he got all these like barbecue grills, and then he was lighting it up.
Carbon monoxide or something.
Yeah. So, and but then because of their encounter through a road rage, it seemed like they were fired up to take revenge of each other.
Yeah. They found something worth living for, even if it was rage and anger.
Yeah. And I love how someone said the anger was a transitionary of consciousness or something like
transitory
that.
Transitory
state of consciousness. That was really funny.
Yeah.
I'm gonna agree with you that I love the aspects of Asianness in this whole series where you follow Steven Yeun into like eating at a Korean restaurant with his cousin.
I love that scene, by the way, in the first episode they kind of go, oh bro, and they're like kind of really like kind of white in the way that they kind of greet each other, but then the guy sits down and then he orders Korean. I love that scene. It's just so normal.
Yeah.
Changing between those two languages is so normal. I love that scene.
Yeah, it also kind of represents the higher that you move up hierarchically in society, in social status, you kind of let go of your own Asianness.
Of course.
You can see Ali Wong's character, how close that she is to
being the whiteness.
Yeah. And also her husband as well, because her husband was like, even the mother-in-law.
Yeah, so George, Ali Wong's husband's mum is kind of like the typical tiger mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
she like is quite intrusive in the way that getting her kind of penetrating her life and her rules between like into the way in which Ali Wong and her husband parent their child. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the little kid? Was she annoying or was she cute?
She was just a very normal kid to me. I don't think there was much things to say about her, but I feel like the reason that they keep talking, the only thing I'll say about is that it seems like they make such a great deal of her doing painting of a family throughout the whole series. And I think
so the little girl paints mentality as a way to deal with her anxiety.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very familiar mentality of a lot of Asian immigrant families thinking that, oh, because, you know, our grandparents or myself is into specific occupation, in this case that the family is like an artist, you know, George's family is an artist, and they expect the child to be involved in art as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't even ask the child whether or not she, you know, really enjoys doing art. Mm. She just forces her to do it.
Yeah.
I think that's something, you know, along the line that many Asian immigrant families do it, you know, not so much as maybe not arts, but, you know, other occupations like law, engineering, and medicine, which we've been talking about this for many, many times.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just think it's such a great, I cannot recommend it enough. I think it will be, I've already seen, like, headlines saying that this will be, like, the show of 2023, and it's so good.
Yeah.
Asian faces, not just put on as a token character, but really up there and represent.
Yeah, I agree. This is really extraordinary TV. It feels like a film. It has the sort of like urgency of a film. Yeah. And it doesn't ever feel like it. I never feel like I need to put myself through any kind of like, oh, this is a long series, I need to sit through this. Like, I'm so engaged in it the whole time. I wanted to ask you, Helen, some chat online has been, people have been talking about the fact that Ali Wong, as you know, I think it was last year she divorced her husband, Justin Hakuda, who's a Japanese-American.
I know where you're going to go from there.
Yeah, well, like, all people are chatting about the real-life correlations between, you know, Ali Wong's
character
and, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
Any thoughts?
Yeah, I do feel like there's a, I don't know if I should use the word connection. That's why I keep saying from the very start of our recording about beef, is that I feel like she was just playing herself. I don't even know if she's acting, because she's always been she's very aggressive. You know, she gives you the kind of vibe that she's very aggressive. She's very straightforward, and there's nothing wrong with it. She's very assertive about herself, and that's a good thing. Compared to the last work that I have seen her on was Paper Girl, where she was a bit more soft and quiet, and her character on Beef is just total opposite. The stand-ups that we've watched, you know, in the past, it's very similar to the character Amy that she's playing. And she's always have Ali Wong has this face that so perfectly she's got symmetry, perfect features.
Mm.
And when she smiles, and you know that is not a natural smile.
Yeah. I love it. She's so fake. Like, her smile is so fake. She's trying to repress everything. I think also just to wrap things up on when we're talking about this in particular, you know, the session where they go to couples counseling?
Yes.
And the therapist, I always am intrigued in TV shows because, you know, Helen and I, we've both said in the past, we've noticed that in the Western shows or movies, we often notice that the therapist is often played by a POC.
Mm-hmm.
And this woman, I believe she was like,
she's Asian.
Definitely not white. She wasn't white, let's just say that. Yeah. And that first time they go to a couple's counseling, I thought it was very sympathetic when Ali Wong talked about how her parents repressed everything,
mm-hmm,
you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's so relatable for you and I, you know? Yeah. Like they our parents, it's an Asian culture. We never talked about our emotions. Like, I think the line that she said was, if you talk about your feelings, it's like you're complaining.
I was like,
that is so fucking true. Yeah. That is exactly what older generation of Asians think.
Yeah,
that's so, and it's so wrong. I think it's so bad. It's so bad.
I can feel like I can so relate it to that because we've experienced that ourselves as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and also at the time when she's talking about money, that her husband just keeps saying that we have enough.
That's all you talk about.
Why you worry about money? But because they came from very different class at the very beginning. Ellie Wong, she didn't really mention, you know, her own family, but you can tell from what she replied to that was that, I came from nothing, you know, and it's always, there's an insecurity about not having money. That's why she was so hard for her. Whereas her husband, you know,
has always had it.
Yeah,
and she says, like, people who have money never think about it.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and actually that scene reminded me because if you haven't seen the show, it's basically she and her husband kind of have a waning relationship. It's not, at least in the beginning, it's not very, there's no spark left. She's worried about money. He isn't. Her anxieties and her needs are not really being met. And that scene where they have the conflict about money where he accuses Ali Wong of worrying too much about money, that actually reminded me of Fleischman Is in Trouble, in the book anyway, the book where when at the first, like at the last 80 pages, you hear from Rachel's perspective and you hear why she worked so hard because she wasn't born into wealth.
That's right.
And I felt that was so sympathetic. Yes. Like that book will always break my heart. Like, let's not talk about the series because I just can't. I have never actually ended up finishing it because I
didn't finish it either. I couldn't go through the first episode.
I could not do any more Jesse Eisenberg droll face. Could not do any more of that. I just couldn't stand his droll face any more longer. But anyway, the book will always hold such an important part of my heart. I might think differently now, you know, in 10 years' time I might hate it, but still I feel like that book changed me in a very fundamental way because I related, the shock of relating to someone like Rachel really startled me because I don't see myself usually as, you know, relating to a very wealthy white woman, a woman who's built her own wealth.
But I also think it's because the financial insecurity is a mentality that we have, or a lot of people have, you know, when you're not born into wealth. And that kind of insecurity lives with you for a very, very long time. And also as a woman, we were always being told we were inadequate.
Yeah.
We were never enough. That's why I'm guessing that a lot of women who are in business that pushes so hard because you don't know when to stop. You need you need basically a huge change of your life to give you the sign that telling you that yes, you're enough. But from the character we've seen in Beef, played by Ali Wong, Amy, I think there was a part that she was saying that she's not getting anything herself. She feels like she's everything for everyone. She's doing it for her daughter. She's doing it for, you know, getting the house. You know, she was talking about the house that she bought, but she is hardly at home. She's always at work. Yeah. So no one's really formally
looking out for her.
Yeah, looking out for her, formally acknowledging her work.
Yeah.
That's how she always feels like she's not doing enough. That's why she's keep on pushing and pushing and pushing.
Yeah. And that character reminds me of a film that I'll finish this episode talking about very quickly called Reclaim, which is a Taiwanese film that came out in 2022 and it's on Netflix. And I'll talk about that in the last 5 minutes of the show. One last thing I wanted to say about Beef is there's a great a small part played by Ashley Park, who is, of course, we know Emily in Paris's friend. Don't remember her name in Emily in Paris. That's how far, like, long ago I've watched that show. But anyway, her best friend, Ashley Park, plays Naomi in this show, Beef, and she is basically the woman who's married to the brother of Ali Wong's soon-to-be boss kind of thing.
Yeah,
business partner, yeah. And I like that scene where they chat and she's like, oh, Ali Wong's like, oh, I wish I could just, you know, do what you do and stay at home. And then you see Ashley Park's character kind of getting insulted. She's like, I don't just stay at home, you know. Like, I do a lot of different stuff. And, yeah, it reminds me of the character in Pineapple Street, these women who feel these stay-at-home mothers who feel like they don't like talking to, like, there's this one character who says she doesn't like talking to women who also work as well as being mothers, because they feel like inadequate compared to them.
I know. I've seen a lot of not so much conflicts, but confrontations, like prolonged confrontations, like the one we saw in the beef between, you know, these two characters. I think people assuming that it is an option, is it? Oh, I don't know. I don't want to get into it. It's such a big.
We can leave that. We can park that for another day.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts before I move on to my last thoughts?
No, I just urge everyone to go and
see. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, I was teaching the other day and I told my students, I always like to start my lessons with, like, hey, guys, what have you been watching, reading? You know, tell me what you've been, you know, consuming. Yeah. And these are uni kids, so they're usually like, I don't know, they're too shy to tell me or whatever. But I was like, I've been watching Beef. Anyone heard of it? Nobody's heard of it. And I'm like, that's sad. But also, like, get onto it, you know. Everyone's into Succession, which, you know, maybe one day I'll get into, but not now. But, so that's Beef on Netflix. Last thing I want to mention about Netflix is, of course, that film I mentioned before, Reclaim.
Mm-hmm.
And Helen, you're going to tell me the Chinese, actual Chinese title, 一家.
Well, 一家之主, the
一家之主,
head, of, the head of the family.
Yeah, so the film is called that. It's by CJ Wang, a Taiwanese, young Taiwanese female writer, also directed this film. Nina Paul plays the lead character, and it's basically a film about a woman in her, I'd say, late 50s, early 60s, who is managing her family, basically. So she's got the most awful husband on the planet, lazy, doesn't do any jack shit stuff. That was super triggering to watch. I always wanted to finish watching it because I actually wanted to stop in the first 20 minutes because I just couldn't handle seeing how pathetic her husband was. Just like not doing anything around the house, doesn't know how to recycle, doesn't know how to cook. It's just horrendous, his level of inadequacy. But what kept me watching was because I just thought, okay, I never watch enough Taiwanese films. I really need to. I was in the mood for something from the 90s or the 80s, but Netflix didn't have anything like that. So I kept watching. But it's a story about her relationship with her daughter as well, who has like relationship troubles. And so she moves back home, and her son, who immigrated to America, is now wanting to come home. And so, and also her mother, her aging mother, who's 85 and has Alzheimer's, and she's living in a kind of nursing home situation, but she wants to take care of her mother herself. And her husband's not very supportive of that. They live in an apartment, like most, like 99% of Taipei people live in apartments. Mm-hmm. And the film follows her trying to acquire a new house, a new apartment for them. And there's a scene, and it's quite a long film movie. It's just over 2 hours, but there's a scene towards the end where she imagines going to some country town with her mum. Her mum, it was imaginary because her mum's like now like lying in her bed and she suffered multiple falls. She's not mobile, but she has a conversation with her mum and she goes on a solo trip to this rural town and we see her imagining her mum traveling alongside her. I lost my shit. I was like sobbing so hard when I watched that scene. It's just so poignant. It's so beautiful. Yes, it's not a perfect film, but it's a film where you really feel like it kind of reminded me actually of Everything Everywhere All at Once, just without all the CGI and fantastical elements of it. It was basically a movie which highlighted the woman, the mother, the wife, as the superhero of the universe, of the world, the one that's the most under-recognized and yet the most critical in making the world go round.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very, very hard to open up to talk about the responsibilities of women's work because it was never really formally been put into money value since, you know, capitalism taken over the world and all this unpaid labor that women are doing has generated works like Reclaim and Everything Everywhere All at Once. Hopefully these works would help people to be more aware of the things that many billions of women, the work that billions of women do, but never been acknowledged.
Mm.
It's taken for granted.
Mm.
Sounds like a good movie. It's always, when you text me, I told you that that movie has on my to watch list for ages, but I just haven't found the time to watch it because it's long.
2 hours. Yeah,
I want to
sit through
it in one go.
Yeah.
So hopefully I'll find some time when I come back, and I really want to watch that. Yeah, because I think it resonates with so many Asian women out there.
I think all Asian, all women, all mothers.
Yeah.
Honestly,
yeah.
Despite your race, all mothers can relate to this movie. It's excruciating to watch, but also very poignant.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for sharing. And that's the end of our episode. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Google, and Apple, and give us a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support what we do here at Asian Bitches Down Under, head to Buy Me Coffee page and make a donation for us to continue the intersectionality in the podcast industry. So that's it from us for now. And we will chat to you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, good luck, Helen.
Yeah, I'll see you soon then.
See you in Taiwan.